Hello, and again, welcome to the Labyrinth Library Podcast. I hope you are well this week.
How are you doing?
You fine? You good? I hope so. Things are good here. I've been working on this writing project. I think I mentioned it last week. It's yearofwriting.wordpress.com. The idea is that every day I will write a short bit of fiction. Now, there is no guarantee this will be good fiction. There's no guarantee that I'll ever end up doing anything with it again. But it's sort of, you know, daily writing exercises. Come up with an idea, write 500 words, 1,000 words, 1,500 words if I'm feeling lucky, and just see what happens. You know, because I haven't been writing for a long time, and it's good to sort of dust things off and get things moving again. So I don't think any of these will turn into anything serious, but it is excellent to stretch the muscles and start working on it again. You'll notice that we are a few months away from National Novel Writing Month. I do have this weird seed of a novel in my head. I have no idea if I'll actually follow through on it. We shall see. In the meantime, it's been very nearly a month, and I have indeed written a bit every day since May 22nd. So, like I said, not all of it's good. There's a pretty high crap-to-gold ratio, I think. But I'm enjoying trying to keep up with it and making sure I do it. And, yeah. So it's interesting on a night like this when I have to do that writing and I have to do the podcast and, of course, I have to go to bed on time because I have to work tomorrow. So the things I do for you. Anyway, I told you last week that we were going to look at sort of supernatural things. We talked about super sense last week, and the sense of the supernatural, whether it exists or not, is irrelevant, but we feel like it should. This week we are entering a story where the supernatural is indeed real and useful to us. And I did, in fact, get a correct guess. It was sort of a tag team guess. Chris and Marissa in the United States both figured out, working together as a team, that it is The God Engines by John Scalzi. Now, you know John Scalzi. He's one of my favorite science fiction writers of the 21st century so far. So I'm always happy to do one of his books. And Mr. Scalzi, if you're listening, and I have no reason to believe that you're not, I hope you enjoy the review. And maybe forgive me, but we'll get to that. Anyway, there is not, to my knowledge, a whole lot of theological science fiction out there. I think Madeline Ellingall's books may qualify, but honestly, I haven't read them for ages, so I really don't know. There is the Golden Compass books, but they're more fantasy-like, seeing as how there's no spaceships and giant talking polar bears. My only really successful foray into the National Novel Writing Month, which I mentioned before, produced some theological science fiction, but what I finished was questionable at best, and it's still fermenting on a hard drive somewhere. I will get to it, I promise. Someday, maybe, and I'll let you know. But, in any case, this is what John Scalzi has given us. And if you're a regular reader of his blog and his other books, then you might find things to be a little bit off in this one. You see, like many accomplished writers, Scalzi has a voice, a way of writing that is immediately identifiable as his own, and which a lot of his fans have gotten used to and come to love. There's no single thing I can point to that really illustrates what this is, but trust me, it is there. There's a certain whip-quick sarcasm, a way of looking at old questions from a new angle, and an ability to cut through the requisite fuzzy thinking that seems so endemic to the human race. In this book, though, he tries on a new voice, something that sounds kind of like his, but at the same time like he's, well, trying on something new. It's as if Jonathan Coulton started doing Manowar cover songs. It's not bad, it's just something that it takes a little bit of getting used to. In the book, Captain Eon Tefe is the commander of a great starship, the Righteous, one of the many ships in the fleet controlled by the Bishopry Militant. He and the other captains in the fleet are charged with carrying out missions for the Bishopry in the name of their god, a being of immense power who uses the faith of millions to rule them. Their lord is a powerful and active god, one who brooks no dissent from his followers and who will suffer no challenges to his dominion. Now, long ago, the lord battled countless other smaller gods and won, chaining them to his will and turning them into the engines of the great starships that carry his people out into the universe. The god that powers the Righteous, however, isn't really cooperating. Now, some ships' gods are quiet and obedient, others are chatty, some of them are cowed into good behavior by fear or pain. The god on this ship is defiant. Despite the prayers of priests and acolytes and the horrible whip that the captain wields to compel obedience, this god soon reveals itself to be part of a greater plan, one which enfolds both Tefe and his crew and reveals a truth about their god that's enough to drive men mad. It's a test of faith for the men and women aboard the Righteous, and if they should fail, their lives will end in quite short order. It's a very cool concept, actually. It's something I haven't seen done before. Scalzi has powered his civilization by faith, quite literally, in a god that not only exists, but is quite active in the lives of his worshippers. His high priests exert complete control over a population that rightfully fears for their souls, and they manage to channel the god's power into various science-like applications. Through the use of amulets, which are called talents, their god facilitates communication over great distances. He compels obedience and opens gateways. He has a civilian population whose faith nourishes him, and a military arm that travels the galaxy, spreading his word and destroying his enemies. And it all makes sense. But as cool as the idea is, to me, the book felt more like a rough sketch rather than a fully fleshed out novel. It's quite short, for one thing, as novels go, and we're introduced to a lot of concepts and characters in a fairly brief amount of time. The Bishopry Militant, for example, sounds like a really great place to see intrigue and double-dealing, you know, lies within lies that still somehow manage to get things done, and we do see some of that when Captain Teffe gets a secret mission to a new world. Now, Scalzi showed us in The Last Colony that he can handle this kind of multi-layered politicking. I think it would be even better in a place like this. Add to that the Rookery, which is kind of a church-sanctioned brothel-slash-therapy center aboard the ships, where the women who work there have nearly as much power and influence as the bishopry itself. Now, what would happen if these two institutions came into conflict with each other, and what weapons would each side wield? Then there's the Chained Gods. They're a wonderful chance to explore a lot of ethical questions. They're undoubtedly sentient beings of great power, enslaved by a god that is greater than they, stronger than they. Is this kind of slavery justified? Would it be possible for a ship to work with its god engine rather than compelling it with whips and prayers? What do these gods know, and how reliable are they? The god powering the Righteous seems to know a lot about how this universe works, including some terrifying tales about the god that Teffe follows, but how much of what it says can be trusted? And then what are the powers and limitations of a faith-powered science? I mean, much in the way that engineers and scientists in our world manipulate a few basic laws of nature to achieve some amazing things, what could be done in a world where prayers have power and where a high priest's whim can decide the outcome of an entire mission? How do you creatively solve problems in a reality like this one where they deal in belief and faith rather than wavelengths and mass? So yeah, there's a lot that I wanted from this book once I figured out what Scalzi was doing with it. After a great opening line, and then a third line which left us kind of confused, the learning curve was a little bit steep. Once you figure it out, though, the possibilities just seem endless. Unfortunately, the book itself ends rather sooner than I thought it should. It's not my favorite book by Scalzi, not by a long run, but, you know, since he said he's going to lay off the old man's war universe for a while, I should be thankful that he's willing to experiment and try new things. As many music lovers know, it's sometimes very hard to accept that an artist you love wants to try to do things that are new and different, rather than keep doing the things that made you love them in the first place. I mean, I remember when U2 put out Achtung Baby, and my friends, who fell in love with, you know, the Unforgettable Fire, and the Joshua Tree, and Rattle and Hum, they were personally offended. Zooropa, of course, was not to be mentioned aloud in their presence. You know, and I think that kind of experimentation and risk-taking is ultimately what helps an artist grow. You may not like what comes of such experimentation, but tough, it's not about you. Now, like I said in the Lost in the Stacks a couple months ago, the artist is not working for you, and if the artist wants to do something different, that is their prerogative. So I don't know if Scalzi will return to this universe. I hope he does. If he does, I hope he lingers a little bit longer than he did in The God Engines, and brings forth another wonderful and complex universe for us to play in. So let me give you a quote. This comes from a god. They do not have names. And this god says, "Faith is not for what comes after this life. Faith is for this life alone." Like I said, I mean, it is Scalzi. So I read it, and I wanted to really, really like it. And I kind of liked it. Which, with any other author, would have been I hated it, but I did. I really, like, the concept is very cool, and I think he could do more with it, and I hope that he does in the future. So, if you are interested in reading something a little bit different off the beaten path of sci-fi, pick up The God Engines and see what you think. You may have a different opinion from me. If you do, I would love to hear it. Come on over to the blog, post in the comments, tell me I'm an idiot, that's fine. Mr. Scalzi Please do not bring the hammer of loving correction. I'm trying to be as nice as possible. But anyway, next week. Got to give you next week. We're talking about that last quote talked about faith and the next life. And this morning, I read a really interesting article, or a few articles, about Mr. Terry Pratchett. Now, I know it hasn't been that long since we did Pratchett. We're going to do Pratchett again. And this article made me sad, because Mr. Pratchett, as you may or may not know, is suffering from a rather rare and, like most, ultimately debilitating form of Alzheimer's. He has trouble communicating now. He doesn't do dedications in books anymore because he can't handle that. He has a full-time assistant helping him write and do the things he needs to do. And he knows what's going to happen to him if this disease progresses. He knows what's going to become of him, and he has decided not to let that happen. And he has plans to take his own life at some point. He wants to go to a clinic in, I think, Switzerland, and quietly, peacefully, at a moment of his choosing with the people that he wants to be with, step out the door. And I understand why he wants to do it, and I think I support him in his decision. Not like I really have any influence over it, but I get it, and I understand why, and I can't really disagree. I just wish that he didn't have to, because he's another one of my favorite authors, and I hate to lose them. It's really, really, really terrible to lose interesting, talented, wonderful people. So, in that spirit, now that we're all bummed out, but in that spirit, I thought next week we'd do a Discworld book. Not just any Discworld book. This is the Discworld book that if you were ever in a band in high school or college, or maybe even after college if you were lucky, then you should read this book. If you have read this book, then you know what I'm talking about. And fellow members of Poster, I know you're all listening. You should know which book this is too. So, that is it. Guess the book for next week. It's one of Pratchett's Discworld books. And I guess, that's all. So I will see you all next week. A text version of this review will be up on the blog, thelablib.org, along with any relevant links I can think of. If you have anything you want to say or any suggestions you'd like to make, please leave a comment and let me know. If you have a book you would like to recommend, I would be happy to hear it. If you'd like to send me an email, send it to labyrinthlibrary@gmail.com. And if you like what you hear, please give a review on iTunes, become a fan on Facebook, or follow LabLib on Twitter. This podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license, so feel free to share it, but please don't sell it or change it. The music is courtesy of Kevin MacLeod at www.incompetech.com. Thanks for listening. I'll be back next week. And until then, keep reading.